I'd like to welcome everybody to today's teleseminar on how to craft powerful, customer-enticing value propositions. My name is Jill Conrath, and as you know, I am with Selling to Big Companies. The teleseminar we're doing today is the one that I probably feel is the most important session of any of the work that I do with my clients, any of the teleseminars that I give, any of the training that I do. And the reason that I feel that it's so important is because the value proposition is the foundation of absolutely everything that you do in your sales process. And until you can clearly articulate your value proposition and really nail it so that when customers hear it, they just say, oh, I really need to talk to this person. Until you can do that, your life as a seller is just that much harder. And I know this from personal experience, and I know this from working with my customers. And for those of you who have read my book, just on the personal experience side, there was a period of time 5 or 6 years ago when I was working with a couple large accounts and lost all my business with them because of things that were happening on Wall Street virtually overnight. And I needed to get new customers. And because I had worked with these accounts so much, and as a consultant I had done so many different kinds of projects with them, I had truly lost my ability to clearly articulate who I was. And so if you'd have said to me, you know, Jill, what do you do? I would say, well, I do sales training, I do new product launches, I help people create PowerPoint presentations, I help them create tools for their salespeople, I do leadership development workshops, I've done future scenario planning. And as you're listening to me now talking, you're probably thinking, oh, my God, you know, why would I want to talk with her? She's just kind of all over the board. And as a seller, I knew that I was all over the board and I had no focus. And so I went through a period of time where I couldn't even make a phone call because I couldn't say who I was, because I knew prospective customers would just blow me off the way I was talking about who I was. So value propositions are just the most critical thing that we can start with, and that is what we will talk about today. So let's talk about why they're more important today than ever before, because I really, that's very, very critical in what's happening. What's happening today in the corporate market is we have companies that are under extreme pressure from the investment community, and because of the pressure these corporations are under, what that means is that they're constantly in a state of flux, trying to reorganize, downsize, reshuffle, et cetera, if they are not growing as well as they should, or else they are, if they're a growth company, they're not adding people and infrastructure until it's desperately needed because they're growing so fast. And so we have two different extremes, and Wall Street is watching over this thing, and as a consequence, what's happening to the people in the corporations is that many, many people in large companies are doing way too much work, and there literally is not enough time for them to do everything that has to be done because they do have the work of 2 to 3 people, and they're scheduled in meetings day in and day out, probably 7 to 8 hours a day in meetings. And what I'm talking about is they're having longer hours, and they're having to go in early to do the 150 emails that they get per day, and then there's the voicemails that come in. And so what's happening is the people in companies don't have time for a whole lot of things. And what we are as people on outside who are looking for business is we are people who want their time. So here they are. We have these poor people who are running around like chickens with their head cut off, desperate for an ounce of time, and we are trying to get their attention and get them to give up their time. That is the seminal challenge that we are facing as salespeople or as sellers. And what we have also now to compound that is if they want to know anything about what we do, they simply go on the Internet and check it out. They don't need to contact us because we are absolutely irrelevant. They can find all their information on the Internet, or so they think. There's the voicemail to keep us even further removed from them as well. And so we are really at bay and being held away because they're trying to protect their time at all costs. It is their most precious commodity. And so that's why we need the value propositions today. Now, just to compare it to what, you know, we've learned in the past, many people say you need an elevator speech, you know, and you need to get a real cool, you know, 10 to 30 second description, a short phrase that hopefully is, you know, memorable and catchy and tells people what you do. And that's really one of the things that we all need as sellers. And an elevator speech, first of all, is really designed for more of a social environment, when you're networking with people and when you're maybe out in the community at different events or with the neighbors or whatever. And basically it's supposed to catch somebody's attention so that they go, oh, that's interesting, and you start a conversation with them. And as such, you know, people will say things, you know, like they might say, we turn lead into gold, or they might come up with some real cute, catchy phrase that's kind of fun that, you know, people go, oh, that's interesting, that's really cool. Or they may be real boring, and some people might say, well, we sell price optimization software, or I'm an accountant, or whatever it is, or we're a Six Sigma consulting firm. So that's what an elevator speech is. Now, some of those are really bad ones, and they really don't get people talking, but they're a short descriptor of what you do. And the reason that these don't help you get into big companies today is, first of all, it's not designed to break through the mentality of a corporate decision maker who's really busy. It's designed to get people talking in a social occasion. It doesn't tie in to any of their critical business issues. It's more just kind of a catchy description. And the true thing is, because it's just a short, you know, let me talk with you about things, it doesn't jolt a decision maker out of his or her comfort zone. It's real easy to ignore. And so when decision makers hear your 10-minute elevator speech, or 10-second elevator speech, they just kind of can blow it off just like that, because it doesn't register on their personal Richter scale compared to all the other things that are going on in their environment and all the other work that has to get done. So elevator speeches don't work. Unique selling propositions is something I also hear people say that you have to know about. You have to be able to, you know, tell your people how you're different from all the competitors that are out there. And you know, the truth is, many of us are not real different from our competitors who are out there. We oftentimes offer services or products that are fairly similar from what's out there. And so how do you say what you're different? And you know, people will try to, you know, tack on that we specialize in, or, you know, they might talk about their approach or their methodology, and or maybe the ingredients or what they do. They might throw in things like, we're state of the art, or we've won these kind of awards, and that we have the most comprehensive something. You know, and they think that when they say these things, that these are going to capture the attention of corporate decision makers, because they're saying things that make them stand out from their competitors. But the real truth of the matter is, and this is where people don't think, when you say this stuff to a corporate decision maker and you share your unique selling proposition, these people don't care how you compare to your competition, because they're not looking to make a change. They are so busy doing what they're doing that the status quo is all they're concerned about. So they're not, you cannot jolt them out of their busyness by explaining how you might compare to somebody else out there, that you have a more comprehensive program or you have a unique methodology. All they care about is how you're different from the status quo. And so a unique selling proposition is only good when they are looking to make a decision, and 90% of the customers that you want to call on are not, maybe even more, they are not looking to change from what they're doing today. They might not like what's going on. It might not be perfect. The status quo might, you know, be even bleeding a little bit, or it might not help them get their goals, but they're so busy trying to get everything done that they will continue with the status quo. So saying how you're different from your competitors is irrelevant. It's totally irrelevant, and you get deleted. You get brushed off and pushed aside. So the only thing that works in today's business environment is a strong value proposition. What is a value proposition? I'm going to expand on the definition, and we're going to talk about some examples. First of all, value proposition answers the question, why should I change from what I'm doing today? Why should I do business with you now when I'm so busy and so swamped and have way too much on my plate anyway? Why should I take time to meet with you? Because, you know, you can change, you can do something that'll help my business. It jolts people into doing wanting to make a change or explore a change. And a definition of it, it's a clear statement of the tangible results a customer gets from using your product or service. Tangible results. Underline that. Tangible results. What difference do you make? Tangible results a customer gets from using your product or service. It's outcome focused. Because they worked with your company, because they used your services, because they implemented your methodology, because they're using your products now, what was the business value? What did you deliver? How is their life different today because of what of working with your company? That's what a value proposition is. It's about not how are you different from your competitors, but it's about what difference can you make to their status quo. So please notice, a value proposition is not what you want to say about your company and how you want to brag about your company. It is about the customer, your client, and the difference it makes to use your product or service. Now, I work with a lot of people, and I hear them come up with value propositions, and they think that they're doing well when they say things like I said earlier, our system was rated best in class at the recent Big Deal conference. Imagine you're a busy decision maker. You're swamped, and somebody tries to get a hold of you and says, our system was rated best in class. What do? You delete messages that have this kind of phrasing because you could give a rip that it was best in class. All you care about is getting the work done. You don't care how they were rated. Or, for example, we're the low-cost provider of this kind of product or service. Oh, good. Just because you're low-cost, I can save a few pennies. These decision makers are not interested in saving pennies. You need to be more specific if you're going to talk about something related to financial things. Tell me how much money you help people save. Show me the difference that you make. Make it worthwhile for me to check it out. If I could get my paper clips for 4 cents from one firm and you can offer them for 3.5 cents, do you know how much money I'm going to save during the course of the year? Not enough to make a difference. So you better make it worth my while and show me the difference that you can make. If somebody says we offer the most comprehensive coverage, I don't care if you have comprehensive coverage if I'm a decision maker. I'm not changing. My firm right now is fine. They're doing a good enough job. And I can go on and on about weak value propositions, but the truth of the matter is you need to get away from thinking of your customers as wanting your product or service because they do not want what you have to offer. It is simply a tool, and you need to remember that. Your product or service is simply a tool that helps them achieve business outcomes. I'll give an example. I give this one frequently because it's the truth that I face every day. I do sales training. I work with sales organizations. I go to sales meetings and do training. There is not one decision maker that I know, one VP of sales, who wakes up in the morning and says, oh, I would like to spend a lot of money and bring my salespeople in and have some training. I would just love to invest in sales training for my people because, yeah, I'm just a good-hearted guy and I just kind of like doing that. Instead, the decision maker wakes up and goes, oh, man, I don't know how we're going to reach our goals this year unless we can crack into some more accounts and land some new clients. Or our order size is way too small and we've got to increase our share of customer. My customer wakes up with business issues. Your customer wakes up with business issues. They don't wake up thinking that they would like to buy a new something, or they would like to bring in a new consultant, or they would like to offer a new, you know, this or that. All they care about is achieving their own business goals and results. So, that being said, let go of it. Nobody cares about your product or service. They only care about the difference it makes. So, strong value propositions. Key points to remember. Talk outcomes. Business outcomes. Not products, not processes, not methodologies. What difference do you make? Tie it to critical business issues if you can. Your value proposition will be so much stronger if it's something that's important to a customer. Case in point, nobody wants sales training, but they want to shrink their sales time, and I can tell that. I can read people's annual reports, and I can see that there are issues with sales or that sales are stagnant. That's a business issue. I can tie what I say in my value proposition to a critical business issue. you can too if you start thinking about what you do in terms of what difference it makes. A value proposition is full of business terminology. It has nothing to do with your product or service. Please, throw out these words. I do not want to hear you use these words anymore because they hurt you. One-stop shopping digs you a grave. Comprehensive, same thing. Full service, full line. Please, throw those things out of your vocabulary. They are not impactful, and they create obstacles for you. If you like to talk about, like, we like to partner with people, get rid of the word partnership. They have enough partners. They don't need any new partners. And if you talk about solutions, please throw out solutions because it means you're trying to sell them. Instead, focus on the difference that you make. Don't talk about your solutions, your one-stop shopping, or something like that. Now, a couple other key points. Please, if you can, include metrics and statistics of any sort. Figure out the value in dollars. Figure out the value in cents. Figure it out over time. Figure out percentages. Customers like metrics. And if you can put metrics on what you're doing, you will strengthen your value proposition. It's not necessary, absolutely, but it really helps. And finally, I would like to say that, you know, you can use the metrics that you can use can refer to specific customer situations. And I guess there's one last key point. When you're thinking about a value proposition, every customer has a different value proposition. Some of them will be similar, but you'll want to tailor it to different people, different kinds of businesses sometimes that are different from each other. For example, if you're calling on a government institution versus a school district versus a manufacturing plant, you may be selling the same thing, but how you position it has to be different because what they care about is different. And even different people within the organization care about different things. So value propositions, you have multiple value propositions. There is not one magic one. There are many value propositions, and it's ability, your ability to articulate them and pick and choose the right ones that will truly make the difference. So what are the components of a strong value proposition? I'd like to, first of all, read one to you. The one that is in the workbook that you have is one that is from, I read it in Business 2.0 magazine, and it was from a company that sold price optimization software. And what they said, and I'll just read you the value proposition so you can hear it, but what they said was, our price optimization software calculates precisely how much you should charge to squeeze the maximum profit from every product every time. Our customers have reported revenue jumps at 7 to 18%, unit volume increases up to 8%, and spikes in gross margins of 24%. Now, let's talk about what makes that a strong value proposition, because there are really multiple components. First of all, the target market of this company was retail firms such as Target and Walmart and Walgreens and places like that. And so these are people who are very much interested in squeezing the maximum profit from every product at every time. And so what we have here is a value proposition that meets number one, our number one component, which is that it's attractive to the decision makers. Okay, these decision makers, and this company is contacting either the CFO, the CEO, or the CIO, Chief Information Officer, and any one of these people would be interested in this kind of message because it takes into consideration there are specific issues and challenges, the responsibilities, the things that they're in charge of. Now, different people may have different interests in this, but again, if you take a look at that value proposition, our price optimization software calculates precisely how much you should charge to squeeze the maximum profit from every product every time. That in itself is attractive, but what they did is they expanded it with the statistics. The second component is it's aligned with their business environment and the business climate, what's going on in their company. And basically, if you have any advanced knowledge about what your customers are concerned about, or your prospective customers are concerned about, then you can really very much focus on the key issues in your value proposition. Now, any retail organization is focused on these kind of things, so it's very much aligned. But one of the things that I always do is I really do research prior to contacting clients, and And I see what's happening in their company. I see the trends in for myself. I'm looking for the trends in their sales and if they're up or down or stagnant or what's happening. I'm looking at their marketplace and what's happening in the marketplace and how they might be doing in that area and any strategic imperatives or competitive moves that are going on. Because a stronger value proposition will really tie in with what's happening in their business environment right now because it's going to make them pay attention. And we're trying to catch their attention. That's what this is all about. The third thing about a strong value proposition is that it really challenges their status quo. It challenges the status quo. Now, remember, the status quo is your biggest enemy. Time is the most precious commodity of our decision makers that we're trying to reach, which means that the status quo is what your life is, you know, what you're fighting. And you need to budge them off the status quo. And they don't want to budge because change is work. And they're already so busy and overworked that they have to do more changes, adding more to their already overfull plate. And so they won't budge unless you jolt them and give them something that's so strong that it makes them take notice. And for example, it might raise a problem that they didn't have, or it might show what's missing, or it might show what they could do so much better if they would change type of things. And in this case, one of our customers reported revenue jumps of 7 to 18%. Now, tell me what retailer in this marketplace would not be interested in revenue jumps of 7 to 18%. Unit volume increases up to 8%. I mean, those things they will drool to achieve. Now, you may say, well, this is really hard to do, and I don't know how to do it. But, you know, when you start thinking in terms of outcomes, you change how you talk. And you don't, maybe you don't need the percents, but it adds to it. Finally, I'd like to say, again, the fourth criteria is the tangible. It expresses the tangible outcomes. Again, 7 to 18%. Volume increases 8%. Those make it stick even more. Not totally essential, but making it more powerful. You can get by without it, but you can make it stronger if you have it. In essence, a strong value proposition clearly articulates the difference that your company makes if somebody uses your product or service. It can be many focuses, but it's attractive to the customer, it's aligned with their business, you know, environment, it challenges the status quo and expresses tangible outcomes that literally jolt them from what they're doing today. Now, what do decision makers have no time for? Well, think about yourself if you were swamped, and you'll be able to answer this very, very easily, too. Because you are just like everybody else. We are busy people who've got way too much to do and not enough time to do it in, and we're under deadlines and we are under pressure. So what do they have no time for? No time for any self-promoting puffery. You must stop saying nice things about yourself. And you may laugh when I say that, but I got to tell you, any time you try to say how impressive your company is, you are actually hurting yourself because they're going, salesperson, of course she'd say that. She's trying to sell me. Well, you're not, you think. You're trying to just explain the difference and help them understand how good your product is so you can catch their attention. But if you do adjectives like, you know, wonderful, fastest, leading edge, outstanding, widely recognized, world leader, things like that, they go, salesman, she's trying to sell me, or he's trying to sell me. So you got to, in your value proposition, get rid of all those words. Now, some of you may say, well, I don't know what to say if I can't say those things. Yes, you do. You need to go back to the outcomes that you deliver. It's not about saying cool things about you because that's what they expect. And that denigrates you and lowers your credibility. They have no time to understand your processes or methodologies. That's important when they're considering switching. But right now, when they're so busy trying to get done what has to get done, and it's on the calendar today, they don't have time to hear about your processes and methodologies. They're really quite bored by that. And they really don't give a rip. Another thing, too, they don't give a rip about your features and capabilities as much as you love them. And maybe you've been trained extensively on your methodologies or your product and your capabilities, and you love it. You can't wait to talk about it. Don't, because it digs your own grave. And it goes back to the minute you start talking about you know, our new products, our new technology, our systems, methodology, whatever, they throw out an obstacle when you're talking to a client. And so you have to eliminate that stuff from your value proposition. Focus on the difference that you make, not how you make the difference. It's not, they don't want to care about if you've got this unique system that allows you to do this, or you've come up with this, you know, unique patent pending something. They don't care. They just want to know about the difference you make at this point. That's all they want to know at this point, at the beginning. You need the value proposition, just about the different things. And they don't want to learn new things that aren't relevant today. These people are under pressure, so don't try to educate them or tell them all about stuff. Focus on their situation, their needs, the outcomes that you can deliver that can impact those kind of things. So what do they love? Decision makers love the language of business. Back to me. I sell sales training. They don't love sales training. They don't love sales training. They love to shorten time to revenue. They love to increase their time to market. They love to cut costs or slash their cycle time or eliminate things. And they love to change the status quo. And it's whatever their objectives are that they're trying to achieve, they need to go either up or down. So you need to think of it. This is status quo changing. There are really two parts of things that decision makers love. And one is the verb part, which is the in a verb. Something goes up or something goes down. It's not the same. If it stays the same, they're not going to change. So it increases, it decreases, it reduces, it eliminates, it shortens, it slashes, improves. It you know, those are the things that they want to hear. So you think, what is that first word? That, you know, what is the verb? Increase, decrease, you know, whatever. And then what does it do? What is the object of the verb? It's gross margins. You increase gross margins. You reduce time to market. You slash cycle time. You improve operational efficiency. You increase time to profitability. You have faster turnaround time. You improve customer loyalty or customer retention, or you reduce employee turnover. So those are the kinds of things that decision makers love to hear, because that is what they're concerned about. That's what they're measured on, and that's what's important to them every single day of their life. They don't care about one-stop shopping. They don't care about your solution or you're wanting to partner with them. They only care about these kinds of things. So some strong value propositions. I'd just like to share with you some that have jumped out at me over the years. And I do, you probably think I'm weird, but I do collect value propositions. And when I hear them, they really make good ones. They really make my heart sing. There's something about me that gets real turned on by them. But moving right along, some examples of some strong value propositions. This one, the first one, was a guy, and he was like a professor at a college. And he was, he didn't even know how to sell, but he was telling me that he also did pharmaceutical benefits consulting. He said, we help large companies reduce the cost of their employee benefits program without impacting benefit levels, a critical issue with the spiraling costs in healthcare. That's what he told me. He says, one of our recent clients, a manufacturing company, saved over $800,000 in just 6 months without cutting service to employees or asking their people to pay more. I mean, this is a value proposition that will make the right person really listen to this man. He wasn't getting his foot in the door. You know why? He was calling and he was giving this value proposition and using this message with the HR people in the companies. Now, the HR people in the companies don't want to do changes and they don't want to add additional things. And they have their budget and they could handle it, what was going on. He was asking them to change. But when he went and used this same value proposition with the chief financial officer, he got in the door just like that. So different strokes for different folks. But the chief financial officer had heard $800,000 in just 6 months and said, you get in here right now. That's what was of high interest to him. The HR professionals saw more work. Another one, I help sales organizations that are struggling to win sales in highly competitive situations. One of my clients was competing against six other companies for a $400,000 contract. They were a small regional engineering firm up against the big boys. Their goal were to be in the second round of presentations with only the top three firms advancing. Instead, they won the business after a single presentation, and within a few months, the value of their contract was well over $1 million. Now, that is kind of a rambling deal, but look at the essence in here. You help people wind sales in highly competitive situations, a $400,000 contract that they got with one presentation, and then within 6 months, it was well over $1 million. The right person will hear that in a sales organization and go, whoa, we need to talk. The final one was a printing technology salesperson. This was one of my clients several years ago who came out with a new technology. Initially, didn't sell because they were focused on the technology. It produced, if you've read my book, it produced a wonderful dot on the printing process. And this customer was really excited about the quality of the dot. There was no bleeding around the edges, and it was really quite unique. And so they went around and they showed the printers the dots, and the printers went, ooh, cool dot, but they didn't end up buying. And so they hired me to come in and find out the difference that their company made, and when we went to some of their printing firms that were using their technology, we came up with this value proposition. Our new technology enabled a recent client to cut staff in one area by 33% while handling the same amount of work. In addition, project turnaround was reduced by days, creating a significant competitive advantage for getting new sales. Finally, it balanced out their workflow, enabling them to delay the purchase of pricey equipment and reduce overtime expense. That is kind of a snapshot of everything that they could do. But what I want you to see in this one here particularly is there are multiple things in here. They cut staff while handling the same amount of workflow. They reduce project turnaround by days. Now, as a salesperson thinking, trying to get my foot in the door, everything in this one, you don't have to say it all the first time you contact somebody. You've got stuff in here. There's meat enough in here in this value proposition that there's enough time to make multiple contacts to your customer and have a slightly different message every time that would emphasize something that would be of business importance. Some other value propositions that I found, I just had one from Google laying around. I pulled it out of a magazine, and they had this neat little thing about keyword advertising. And they have a picture of this gal. Her name is Gina, and she started buying and selling designer clothing just for fun. And what they say in here is at the end of the year, she hit $100,000 in monthly sales, and the drop in her ad costs from 20% down to 5% of revenue made her margins that much higher. Her sales also rose 20% a month. This is a story about a certain customer, because value propositions are based on what your customers are doing and outcomes that they're receiving. So how do you find your own value proposition? How do you clarify it? And it's really about, first of all, taking a good hard look at your own product yourself to find out. First thing you do is you sit down with yourself or your colleagues and you say, what difference am I making? And you can't do that unless you can first of all say, when I walk into a customer's operation, how are they currently doing things? Prior to me really getting involved in new product launch or in cracking into corporate accounts, which is what I'm really focusing on right now, all my work was in the area of new product launch with companies. And I did things like helping companies clarify their value proposition and helping them create tools for their reps and helping do a lot of sales training for the reps after they had been trained on the new product or new service. So taking a look at how do I find my value proposition from this, if I took a look at how people were doing previous to my working with them, which is something that you really need to do. If they're not using our product or service today, how are they doing things? What they were typically doing is that the marketing department was putting together brochures and they were putting together price spec sheets and they were and then they would call their salespeople in and they'd have technical training on how to use their product or service, and then they would send their salespeople out to the market and say, go get them. You've learned everything now about the new product, how to configure it, how to order it, how to do all this kind of stuff, and so your job is to go get them. That was the current way that they were doing things before I worked with them. Because of doing it that way, they encountered some problems. And this is where you need to look at your own stuff and say, what problems were they encountering with the way they were doing things or the product that they were using prior to using mine? And in my case, what would happen is that when in these technology companies, when salespeople would learn all about the new product, they'd go running out to their best customers. And they'd say, oh, Bob, I got to tell you about our new technologically advanced gizmo, and it's really exciting, and let's get together. So they would know who their best customers were, and they would go running out there, and they would dump on them everything that they needed to know about this new product or service and the stuff that they had just learned in the previous meeting. And customers would literally say to them, well, that's really neat, Jill. How much does it cost? And you know as well as I do that if you hear that how much does it cost, you know, question right up front, it's like gonzo and you're in deep tapioca. And so, or else they might say, well, can it do? And then they throw in some, you know, really stupid thing that was irrelevant, and you'd say, well, no, it can't do that. And they go, oh, well, if it can't do that, we can't change. Or finally they would say, the worst thing of all that I hate is, oh, that's really neat, Jill. I bet you'll sell a lot of those. With the unspoken word thing in parentheses, but not here or not now. So that was the problem that would happen. So what happened, the business issue, what were the business implications of these things I'm telling you about? They would miss their opportunities. They would derail and derail their sales efforts, or certainly delay them many months, and they would allow the competition to get inside. So what was the value of working with me if that was the typical situation they were running into? I helped them shrink time to revenues. I helped them speed up their sales velocity. I helped them increase the lifetime profitability of their new products. That's what you need to do with your own product and service. Every one of you can do something like that. It's sometimes not easy to know it exactly, and it sometimes takes talking to your customer or talking with your colleagues to figure some of this out. So let's talk about some of these things. What can you do and how can you figure out how to strengthen your value proposition? First thing you can do is talk to your customers. And that is a real interesting thing to do. And I've had a lot of people go do that. I'll give you a couple examples. One lady that I did some work with was an organizational development consultant and did nice stuff like team building and conflict resolution, all this soft stuff kind of thing. And so when people asked her what she did, she goes, oh, I do team building and, you know, helping people communicate better. And I mean, that just sounds real flaky and like nobody's interested. So I said, go back and talk to your client. So she went back. She had worked with a hospital, a dialysis unit of a hospital that everybody in the everybody was really fighting, and the conflict was actually compromising patient safety. And so the VP decided that without a quick turnaround, she'd be forced to close the unit and have the medical staff take the patients to another facility. That was the crisis situation she went into. When she went and talked to her customer, she found out that they were able to regain their professional standards and resolve the conflict, regain their professional standards, and now the dialysis unit contributes $2.5 million to the annual budget. This is money that they would have lost. This is what she found out. Now she has a business reason. All this soft stuff really does make a difference. Another one of my clients went and talked to their customers. They sold commercial real estate, and they talked to people about, we help you with your commercial real estate needs. And as everybody knows, there's like a gazillion people who do commercial real estate, and they all help people with getting better deals. But they went and talked to their customers, and they really, before we sent them out to talk, they figured out that a couple of things that they really focused on was the physical flexibility of helping people get the right physical resources and the right size buildings in the right places to help them meet their supply chain needs. And so in one of their situations, they were able to, when they talked to the customer, they found out they were able to reduce their space needs by 10%. They saved them $500,000 on the lease and $500,000 in reduced capital expenses. And they cut 2 to 3 weeks from the delivery schedule. Now, this is not something that they knew. They just helped people, you know, with their commercial real estate needs. But when they talked to their customer, they found out that they really did make a valuable difference. And then instead of now, if you think of this, they reduced their space needs by 10%. They saved them $500,000 on the lease and reduced their capital expenses by $500,000 as well. Plus, they cut the delivery schedule. They have something different to say about who they are than other commercial real estate people, because they're not talking about, we can find space, we can get you a good deal. They can talk business results. They are going to crack through. When they use this methodology, they crack through. They jolt people, and they sound different from the get-go. So this is the kind of thing that when you talk, you know, to your customers, you can really, really find out some good data. Another one of my clients actually went out and she was told, I mean, she worked for a big company, and you'd think that big companies, if some of you work for them, you'd think that they'd tell you all this stuff, and then they don't because the marketing department doesn't know that they're supposed to. And so she was just told to go out and sell this software, and she was on doing it on the phone. And so I said to her, Carol, there's no way you can sell it without understanding the difference it makes. So I said, why don't you call some customers? And so she did. And so what, you know, so I've got just some words here, quotes, because she actually recorded the conversation and shared it with me. So she, Carol says, she's talking to the one guy, so in other words, how much time do you think this is saving you? She's talking about this stuff that they have. And the customer says, well, between customizing testing and development testing, we're saving at least total days of work within a given work cycle, let's say 40 hours. We're saving like something like that. And that also is the time to create the transport, and we're not losing our train of thought because we have to jump to another job. And so it's actually giving our programmers more time. And then he goes on and explains this. She just asked him, what difference is it making? Since you installed our stuff, what difference is it making? Help me understand the impact. And then she just followed his chain of thought. And so what questions can you ask? I would suggest you go back to the four things. What? How were you currently handling things before you worked with us? Find out what they were doing. The best customers to interview, by the way, are the ones who have just got your stuff in the last 6 to 12 months because they are still familiar with what they had before and they can now see the results of working with you. So what kind? How were you doing things before we worked with you? What problems were you encountering? What was difficult to do? What were you unable to achieve because of that? So you start current situation, and then you explore the problems that they were having and what they couldn't achieve and what the, you know, the gaps were in terms of their objectives. And then you explore the implications. So how was it affecting your business? What business metrics were being affected because of this? And ask them what value it is to them since they've used your product or service. Sometimes it's not easy and customers can't answer right away, but just keep exploring. The biggest thing when you're out exploring with customers, the biggest thing is to not jump into a sales thing, but to actually sit back and lean back and say, I am really here just to learn and to try to understand the difference that my firm makes. And sometimes you'll find out that things weren't perfect and that there were some real tough things that happened, like in the implementation. And you just need to hear it and understand it and not justify it. You need to go with the customer and really figure out how were they things before you were at? How are they doing things before you when they were using somebody else's stuff? What couldn't they achieve? What were their goals and objectives? What problems that they were having? What were their business implications? And what value they've achieved since moving with you? That's your job with your customer because they'll help you with metrics. Now, so you talk to these people and you're trying to find these things out, but what if they don't have good metrics? Ooh, I really hate that, but you know, a lot of people don't have good metrics. And I had trouble with my own customers when I did the product launch stuff because they honestly didn't have good metrics because they never, never did, they never ever compared how things were before Jill or after Jill, and each new product launch was different, and they never launched things from one half the country to another country. So the first thing I would say, what if you don't have good metrics? Always speak the language of business. That is imperative. They don't care about your product or service. Remember, it's simply a tool. They don't care about it. They do care about their business, their objectives that they're trying to reach. So your language of business has got to focus on key things that are of importance to them. It's got to focus on change, too. Remember, up or down, things have to get better. They have to shrink. They have to improve. They have to reduce. They have to slash. So always talk the language of business if you don't have the statistics. Some of you may have read my blog, and if you read my blog, I would like to invite you to go there again because I have a delightful post on my blog. And you can get to my blog by going to my website, sellingtobigcompanies.com, and there's a blog thing there. And then if you click on over there, you'll find a post by a gentleman. I posted it. It's called Louie's Elevator Story, Peeling the Onion. And again, this is from Charles Legalos. He's president of Critical Contacts, and he shows how he helped somebody peel the onion of his value proposition. And what Louis said, and this is his story, before they worked with them is we help clients assess their infrastructure to help them deploy a more robust network environment so that they can be productive in their business, blah, blah, blah. And he literally has a whole paragraph in the answer to what do you do question. And in this article, Charles shows how they got him down to say, we help customers reduce operating costs by $47,000 a year. And he just shows you net by net how he took out the different technical terms and the abstract terms to get down to the language of business that people care about, not the language of you who maybe understand the technology all too well or love your product or service too much. Anyway, so that's one thing. Go to my blog and check out that elevator story. Second thing. What can you do if you don't have good metrics? You can use industry statistics. There are wonderful industry statistics that can be extraordinarily helpful to you in running your business. One of the first things that I found years ago is that 75, in a recent study by Siebel, 75% of the executives felt that a poor value proposition was the major cause of failure of their products to be successful in the marketplace. By the way, that's the importance of this seminar today. But I often use that statistic in cracking into corporate accounts myself, because if 75% of executives feel that a poor value proposition is the result of a new product launch failure, in which they've invested millions of dollars and so much of their company time and put their professional reputation on the line as a company, this is a critical business issue. It was a statistic I could readily use. Another statistic I have here that could be used, according to this sales effectiveness study, 52% of sales professionals agree they don't identify and reach key decision makers in the sales opportunity they pursue. 52% of salespeople don't identify or reach key decision makers. Now that, again, is a study I can use to help me get into a corporate account. You have your own. I found a good one on creativity. Arthur D. Little survey of 669 global company executives found fewer than 25% of the companies believe innovation performance is where it needs to be successful in a competitive marketplace. So if you do innovation consulting, here is a statistic that supports what you do. I found out another statistic when I was looking through some things today. Industry statistics on the benefits of personalized print communications. You get a 34% increase in response set rate, a 24.5% increase in order size and order value. If you don't have your own stats, use somebody else's. Borrow statistics. It's not bad. It's okay. And what else can you do? You can extend existing business statistics. Your customers already have statistics in different things that they do. I'll give you an example on this. One of my friends owns a design firm, and they redesigned milk cartons. Now, that may not sound like a real exciting project, but milk cartons haven't been redesigned for a long time. And if you're still going to operate in the four-square box milk carton, you know, what can you do to make a difference? And can you really make a quantifiable difference? And what they did is they studied what the real difference was that in milk cartons when people bought milk. And the biggest issue when people bought milk is that, like, the wife might send him to the store to get milk, and they always drink 2%, and the husband comes home with whole milk because he didn't pay attention to the details on the chart. So the biggest thing, you guys are probably feeling picked on, but the biggest issue was that people got the wrong kind of milk. If they wanted skim or whole milk or anything in between, they got the wrong kind. So the one thing they did is in their redesign of the milk cartons is they put 1 in big letters or 2 in big letters, and they had them in different colors. So they were really, really visible what kind of milk you were getting. As a result, sales of this product went up significantly. So they took the existing business statistics, what are our sales today, and then they looked at how their graphics changed the sales of their product, and they came up with a very strong value proposition that was distinct and measurable. Finally, you can engage new customers in measurements, and there's a lot of ways you can do that. You can set up your own benchmarks with them and agree what you will measure over time. And if you can do this, I would encourage you to do this because it will give you additional confidence that what you do provides significant value to your customers. All right, so pulling together some thoughts. Once you have your value proposition, and again, this is absolutely critical that you get your value proposition and you don't find it overnight, you can do a lot with it. Before I talk about that, though, I would like to say that we will be opening the phone lines in about 3 minutes to ask questions. And so if you have some questions that you want to ask, maybe you want to think about it right now, and I will take questions from you. Okay, so how do you use your value proposition? The first thing I do with my value proposition is I need to get a hold of customers. Once I figure out what is, how can I really say what I'm doing, I develop a series of voicemail messages with key bullet points that different messages for different calls that I make, because you can't just plan on making one call into a corporation today. You have to plan on multiple calls. So you maybe need a series of 3 to 5 different versions of that. So that's the first thing you do with the value propositions. You have multiple value propositions, you can have multiple voicemail messages. Another thing you can do is you can craft an enticing letter to decision makers at your targeted accounts. And that is really good too. Short, precise, targeted, effective. You can also use it as a basis for your marketing collateral. If you put in your marketing collateral all the stuff your product or service does, or you explain your brilliant methodology, it will probably end up in the wastebasket. But if you focus on the business issues and case studies and what people are experiencing and talk about the difference you make, people will read it. Your value proposition is also something that becomes incorporated in when you create your customer-focused PowerPoint presentations, if you ever do that. I always use my value proposition as a foundation for developing questions, because essentially you take your value proposition and you go backwards and you say, what questions do I need to ask to find out how people are handling things in the area of which I can make a significant difference? And you focus on how they're currently handling things, what their goals are, what they're trying to achieve, and the problems they might be having achieving their goals based on how they're doing things today, and how that's influencing their business. So essentially, it creates the questions that create the conversations that you will use when you talk to customers. And it's also the core message that's delivered in your totally customized proposals, because that's essential too. Finally, I'd really like to say that the biggest value of knowing what your value proposition is, the biggest value is that you know personally that what you do makes a difference. And I'll never forget Karen, who worked for me when I was at Xerox, and who told me that she felt like she might as well be selling waste baskets, because what she was doing was so worthless. I mean, it just felt like selling waste baskets. When you feel that what you're doing is just making a pass and it's not making a difference in a company, you don't feel real good about who you are. And you hate calling people up time and time again, and you hate, you quit earlier because you know it's just kind of a thing that you're selling and you don't really care about it. You don't really know what difference it makes. But when you really know that what you do impacts customers, honest to goodness, you don't have qualms about calling people because you know you make a difference, and you don't have qualms about calling them back again because you know it makes a difference and that they just don't know the impact that you can make. And you keep at it despite the rejection, and ultimately you do get more business because most people quit early because they feel like what they're selling is just something that, like a wastebasket. And what you're selling isn't a wastebasket. You get inside any of the products or services that you sell, and you will find that you do make a difference. And that's what value propositions are about. That's why you need them. So with that, I am going to open the phone lines for questions.
Jill, if we didn't get all the blanks filled in, are you going to send an answer key around for this handout?
I don't have an answer key, but you can listen to it again if you want.
Okay, that'll be great.
Yeah.
How do we listen to it again?
send me your email address, and I'll send you a link to the completed audio tape.
Great.
Okay, so anybody who sends me their email address, I'll just send you a link to the audio program. It should be available tomorrow.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
So how would you recommend creating a value proposition for a service, not necessarily a product?
Oh, it's exactly the same way. I mean, seriously, it's exactly the same way. You just need to get inside how are people doing things today without your product, without your service. I mean, think of it. I'm a service, too. So, I'm thinking service most of the time. I'm better at service than product. They are doing things currently today without you. How are they doing it? There's probably only 1, 2, or 3 ways. They're either doing it themselves or they're using a different service provider. And so You need to figure out what difference you can make from how they're doing it today. And sometimes, honestly, sometimes the real difference in terms of, you know, like what they're doing is the fact that you start talking business stuff. Most service providers talk about their methodology and their unique systems or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they can do and their comprehensive services. And if you can focus in on, and the other thing I would suggest with service businesses is you can probably, as a service business, do a lot of things. Focus in on some of the core things that really make a difference as opposed to the comprehensive things that you can do, because there are certain aspects of your business that open more doors than others. And there are certain things that you do that are very similar to everybody else out there and won't open the doors.
Bill, where does pricing in on this?
Pardon?
Where does pricing in on this?
Pricing does not enter in on this. Why are you asking that question?
Because I get asked that all the time.
Tell me when you get asked it.
When I'm doing my presentation, or even current customers say, you know, it's a little bit too expensive.
I'm sorry, they say what?
It's too expensive.
It's too expensive. What's too expensive?
The service we offer.
Okay. I would suggest that somehow in there you get talking too much about the service you offer up front before you focus on the business value and the difference that you can make, and they get caught right up at the beginning. Usually as sellers, when they talk about price too soon, it's something that we have done that gets them talking about it. I mean, and it's really because we probably are talking too much about what we do and what our service offering is or what our product is. And that's usually what I see happening over and over again. If you'd like to call me afterwards, I'd be glad to talk with you about a little bit more detail.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, question about how you affect regulatory compliances for jolting a customer into product.
Say that again about regulatory compliances.
Right. So how effective do you think that would jolt a customer?
What is the impact of not being in compliance?
Definitely fines or loss of service.
Okay. Regulatory compliance, I mean, people hate compliance issues because it's something they're being forced into. I mean, that's the reality of human nature. But it is something that they have to do, and it can be done. And to just talk about compliance, if you know of any examples of people that, you know, were out of compliance, that had problems, and you can talk about some of those issues or put, you know, some of that into your value proposition, it can make a difference. It can open doors.
Jill?
Yes.
Hi, my name's Dan. I got a question.
Yes.
It kind of actually ties into maybe the second to last person who talked about, you know, when a client says, you know, they start bringing up price right away or,
yep.
or whatnot. In my field, I'm in staffing. I'm selling a staffing service. What do you do when, picture this, you got a bittersweet situation. The bitter part is I got a lot of competition who's selling the old way, which is great.
Yep.
Or that's the sweet thing, actually. The bitter part is that they've actually somewhat trained most of the buyers in this market to be expected for that type of presentation.
Yeah.
So one would hope that by coming at them with this more of an elevated approach that, you know, that in and of itself would wow the prospect. But sometimes I think I try to go down that path of being a little bit more business savvy and not, like, you know, asking the drooling wolf questions. But they almost kind of want to throw me back into, it's like they're not prepared for it, so they start asking me questions that make me have to answer in old school ways, which might force me to go down that path of price before I even want to.
Yeah, and what you're saying is very realistic, because what you're talking about is something that has become a commodity in the marketplace. And it's, you know, how much are your people and, you know, how... I mean, you know.
Yeah, they may have had their mind made up before you even actually got to the appointment, because they
yeah.
at least know a little bit about what you do. So they've heard 14 other people say it the old school way, so they're probably expecting you.
They are expecting you, and you're not doing things properly when you do it that way. First of all, I would like to say that, you know, when you are choosing not to compete on the pricing, lowest cost pricing model and the commodity model, there are some people who don't want to play with you. I mean, they really don't, because they want the cheapest price. Sometimes you have to elevate yourself and go up a little bit higher in the account to find somebody who is concerned about more of the issues that you're talking about.
So steer clear of, you know, in my world, I really try to make it my last-ditch effort to talk to HR. I'm usually trying to talk to a hiring manager at the very least.
Right, right. So the HR people will try to force you into the how much, you know, what is your rate per person, and, you know, and they'll try to do that because that's what they know. But if you talk to the hiring manager, they want a good person.
Okay.
Right?
Absolutely. That's all they really care about.
They really don't care about how much. And if it's $10 more an hour, they really don't care about it as long as they get somebody with the right qualifications because they've, believe me, they've had bad people come in and they have people that haven't shown up on time, you know. So they're just concerned about getting the work done. They're the ones who are attracted to your message. It's a different message.
Hey, Jill, I have a question.
Yes.
I think I've read that conventional sort of brand philosophy holds that, you know, your value prop should be kind of singular in terms of, you know, what your offering is or what you can do for people, what the difference you make for people. And some of the things that you said in this presentation indicate that that should be really tailored toward a specific customer or a specific need. And how do you sort of reconcile, you know, sort of the, how do you reconcile both of those? I mean, if I bump into a decision maker in an elevator and I don't really know anything about that person, because I haven't really been prospecting that person, then how can I, and they say, hey, what do you do? How can that value prop I deliver to that person be specific to him or her, and, you know, how do you reconcile that?
Okay, first of all, when you say typical brand philosophy, I would say that marketing is trying to do something different than you are as a salesperson. They're trying to create a position in the market, and it's very different from what we do, and it's the one position, so we're seen as the company that does this. There is also some research that shows, I believe, that 85% of a client's perception of a brand is based on their sitting down with the one person who's representing the company. And so it's really critical that you are the brand to the company, essentially. Again, they're seeing it through you. So how do you reconcile the personal versus the non-personal? Marketing's thing is different. As a seller, you have a one-on-one thing with a person, and when you're sitting down with them, you better know something about their company if you're trying to get in. You better know something about what's going on. That being said, what do you do if you meet somebody in the elevator, right? Because that's what you're saying. How do you handle that?
Yeah.
There are certain things that you can talk about. For example, if people say to me, Jill, what do you do? I mean, what I will say, if I'm just doing a general one, is I will say I help people crack into corporate accounts and shrink their sales cycle. And
so you can probably find commonalities out of all your value props,
and
that becomes your bigger, higher level.
Yeah. And but you see, I'm focusing on the business issues.
Yeah.
I'm not focusing on, you know, I run a stellar sale, internationally recognized sales, or, you know, training organization.
Yeah.
I don't say that because that's what a marketing person would want me to say. But if I'm dealing one-on-one with a person, I got to focus on something that is of issue, that's potentially of issue to his or her business needs. And for my prospective customer, it's, you know, I help those people crack into corporate accounts and increase the sales velocity.
Hey, Jill?
Yeah.
Where do you go to get your research? You were mentioning these different statistics and whatever.
Where do I go? Are you talking about the sales things that I just quoted you, or are there...
No, let's see. You were talking earlier about, the blogs. It was a while back, but you were talking about, you know, I think metrics and how you were able to get some metrics on clients in advance of a meeting.
What do I do is one thing I will do is I will look at the annual report. I mean, you know, that's a simple thing, and you can download it right now, but honestly, I can find out good things in the annual report. I don't need to read it, everything. I'm looking at their, from my perspective, I'm looking at what their sales trends have been, and I'm also looking at what they're saying their specific business objectives are. I mean, they may be saying that they're going to launch new products, increase operational efficiency, and I'm looking for words that are imperative. That's one place that I will always go. And to me, it's the most important place. But then again, I also am, and I think all of us out there, we should be specialists in what we're selling, and we should know what's going on in the industry that we sell, which should enable us to know more industries, more statistics about what's happening in the market and other customers, too. There's a lot of places you can go. I have some listed on my website under free stuff, free resources. If you go to my website, free resources, there's a whole section of places, websites you can go to find out information.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jill? With the current climate of cold calling being being not very popular anymore. I find it interesting that your whole approach is based upon value proposition cold calling. What are your thoughts on that?
Right now, from a sales perspective, cold calling is still showing itself to be the most effective way of getting in. I totally believe in lead generation efforts, and if companies implement lead generation efforts, bravo, because salespeople need all the help they can get. And I truly mean it because it's so darn hard. And I honestly believe that in if you take a look at, and I don't know if you've read my book, but if you take a look at the, what I'm really saying is I'm saying launch a campaign. And a campaign is something spread out over time where you would, you know, you would actually do, you know, mail out something of information. You might send out a white paper. You might invite them to a webinar. You might, you know, but you put together a campaign that you put in over time. And so it's almost like you create, as a salesperson, if you don't have lead generation coming from your own company, you have to create your own lead generation efforts. And cold calling is only part of it. But you do have to get a hold of a human being at some point to get your foot in the door. And if you can do things, and I'm not sure which business you're in, but some companies, some people who are listening today are single people from small companies, and some of you are from giant corporations. And And if you're a small company or if you're a corporation, if you can do things to attract customers to your business, like the lead generation things, like becoming a thought leader in your industry, like writing articles, like speaking at events, and do the attraction strategy, you need to do that too. It's not one or the other. It's both. Because some of those strategies take, those lead generation strategies and the attraction strategies can take 2 to 3 years to really see fruition.
Okay.
And I can honestly tell you, because I started implementing personal lead generation strategies, you know, with thought leadership on the web, posting articles, writing newsletters, and it took about a year and a half for me to really start seeing results come in. Now, as a company, I can't wait for business for a year and a half to come in, or I'm going to starve.
That's right.
So I have to pick up the phone and call people, which is why I talk about that too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to have to wrap this up, everybody. Thank you much, and hopefully the conversation on value propositions has added some great value to your business, and I wish you all great selling. Thank you much. Talk to you next month. Bye-bye. Yeah.